and we won't have to cry no more.
Welcome to Tabard Inn, y'all, a weekly podcast about the stories we tell and the events we discuss while on pilgrimage as queer Catholics. I'm Pat Gothman, cradle Catholic, pretty new to the queer community, and look, I don't understand online Catholics, but I feel like I really don't understand Catholics who want to do spiritual interventions in the name of coffee and say, let's get coffee, and then they sit you down and dissect your entire life. And I don't understand that brand of Catholics.
I feel like that's more of a evangelical thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think they got it from the evangelicals, but it is very much a piece of at least Southern Catholic culture now.
Well, I am his fiance, Jacob, newbie Catholic, and I once thought that there was no other way to become Catholic other than to marry one. So,
what, like getting your immigration status?
Yeah, so thankfully I didn't actually have to marry you before I became Catholic.
You technically didn't, yeah. Technically that sacrament came free of marriage.
So what have we got in the podcast today, Pat?
Well, today we've got a very special episode. You're going to call this our first annual Thanksgiving Day Queer Family Dinner. And we've got a special guest to join us all the way from Columbus, Ohio, Vine and Fig co-founder Patrick Weston. Welcome to Tabard Inn, Patrick.
What's up, friends? How are you doing?
We are great. How are you? Tell us a little about yourself for anybody who may not know who the co-founder of Vine and Fig is.
Yeah, so my name's Patrick. I live up in Columbus, like you said, Pat. Web developer by day, Vine and Fig co-founder by night. We just got connected with a mutual friend and kind of kicked this thing off about a year ago. It's been really exciting watching the community grow, and I'm excited to be a part of it and excited to be on this episode.
For anybody who doesn't know, Patrick basically makes the entire Vine and Fig entity run. Everything that's going on behind the scenes is because of Patrick. We just found out that how many malware attacks or whatever did we have on our website in the past year?
This is like the nerdiest thing, but it was, I don't know, like 150 or something.
There
like
were like
that.
150 attacks on our website, and Patrick stopped all of them just
Aren't
by
they,
flexing.
And they're all from Ukraine, right?
Yeah, like 148 are from Ukraine.
Shady things going on in the Ukraine these days.
Russian hackers is what I'm saying, and they're just pretending to be from Ukraine.
It's just pretending to be queer Catholics.
Yeah, they're mad that we're not Orthodox.
That's it. That's it. All right, so what we are going to do for our queer family Thanksgiving Day bash is do a big kind of roundtable Q&A. So we've got a giant spinning wheel, kind of like Wheel of Fortune style spinning wheel that we've got pulled up on the screen right now. And about half of the questions were sent in via Instagram from anonymous Vine and Fig followers for the three of us to answer. And then about half of them are kind of like fun, get to know you style questions. And then there's a couple of like just more intimate Catholic style questions that are thrown in there as well. So we are going to go around the table and all the way over to Columbus, Ohio as well. But we're going to go in alphabetical order, which means that Jacob, you are up first.
I think we're going the other way around.
I think we said alphabetical. So let's go ahead and start off with, I'm excited about this. First question. Would you rather have skin that changes color based on your emotions or tattoos appear all over your body depicting what you did yesterday?
Well, my face, I can't hide my face based on my emotions.
You have a terrible
it's really hard.
Face, that's true.
Yeah. So I guess nothing really changes for that.
As far as emotions, it's difficult for you to hide your emotions.
Yeah.
So skin changing color based on emotions isn't going to do a whole lot different.
Since I already have several tattoos, I'm going to go with tattoos. And I feel like that will also keep me in check for being a good Catholic. I mean, I'm not going to, like, say if I was a bad person and I spit on a homeless person, that's going to be very visible on my skin. I'm not afraid that that's going to happen, but...
I agree. I think that I would definitely go with tattoos on my body in order to keep me in line.
Yeah. I think the force or the accountability of being a pious Catholic, I think
it would really
thing.
Help me in my life. Absolutely.
Yeah, you big heathen.
Patrick,
I'm just
do
thinking
agree?
Of stuff like, yeah, just like stuff outside of your life too. Like, oh, I went to the gym. Like, good for me. So
it could be a very
actually
humble
be really
brag.
Helpful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can these tattoos be in a specific style of my choosing, or like, because I don't want some like. If I went to the gym, I don't want like a giant dumbbell tattooed on my back.
Yeah, that adds a whole nother level to the idea of it being a very douchey style tattoo that shows up.
Whoa. I'll stick with tattoos. So this question is for Pat. If the Vine and Fig community were 100% anonymous, what would your pseudonym be?
Oh, that's a good question. I've never had any issue with saying my name in the Vine and Fig community, but I totally understand why a lot of Vine and Fig community members want to start out, at least, with being anonymous as they're kind of testing the waters of talking to other queer Catholics. I don't know if anybody else had this with the recent iOS update, but it gave me a new kind of nickname for the like game Central whenever I play a game. Mm-hmm. And it gave me the magical black unicorn of the forest as my nickname. And I love that.
So it kind of reminds you of Black Phillip from The Witch.
Okay, I thought about it as being very magical and mysterious, but Black Phillip was the devil. So I suppose it's fitting either way. Anybody else have a pseudonym you can think of off the top of your head?
I tend to be really self-deprecating, so I feel like it would be like Tall Awkward Nerd or something like that with some letters or no numbers for letters or something like that in there, but I don't know.
What was y'all's original AIM username? Patrick, I hope you're not too young to have one of those.
Yeah, what's AIM? No,
AOL Instant Messenger.
I caught the very tail end of that. Mine was very literal. It was pat_pfw_123. I have no idea why, but that was it.
What was yours, Pat?
Mine was a very dorky swimming one. Mine was sprints only because I hated long distance swimming and I liked doing sprints, and sprints only seemed really cool at the time.
I can't remember mine. Most of my friends called me Jake back then.
Yeah.
And I was into snowboarding. So I think it was a mix of those two things, Jake and snowboarding, but I just don't remember.
Sounds so bro-y.
You know me.
All right. This question
dumbbell
is...
Dumbbell tattoos on your back.
Lifting for the glory of God.
All right, Patrick, yep. I'm going to give you two in a row here because in our Instagram poll, someone just wrote in that we are all very cute, and I want to let you respond to that.
Thank you. I don't know. I don't take compliments well, so that's something I've been working on. So I'll just say thank you, and that would be my response.
All right. Awesome.
Do people often think that Pat and Patrick are together? Have you ever got that
assumption? I've never gotten that. Have you ever had someone ask about that?
I have not. But I feel like people also think we might be one person.
That I think I've gotten more of it just being two tall white guys also named Pat and Patrick. So yeah. I think that's been confusing for folks, but I feel like I've done a decent job of letting everyone know that I'm engaged to a very handsome fellow who is not named Patrick. All right, Patrick, here's your part two question. How do y'all deal with ex-gay testimonies whenever you hear them?
Yeah, this one's interesting for me because I didn't really encounter them growing up. It wasn't something that was really on my radar. I feel like I did struggle with kind of this idea of being gay and Catholic, but that was never something that was like recommended or something that I saw around. I don't know. Right now, I just think it's really ridiculous. The science is out there that shows that it's really harmful, and it just is really frustrating when I see it. It's kind of how I feel about climate change. Like, the data is there, the science is there, and yet we're just choosing to ignore it. And they're both things that have been really harmful for people. So I get frustrated and kind of tend to ignore them. I wish there was a better way to fight back against it, but I don't really know what that is other than kind of saying that it makes no sense.
I don't want to speculate here, but do you think that individuals who identify as ex-gay maybe took that route because they thought it would be easier to claim that they were ex-gay and did away with the homosexual tendencies or thoughts? I guess I've never really spoken to anybody who's identified as ex-gay.
I haven't either. I know some folks that are like making some media online that are going and doing interviews. It's going to be really interesting to hear those. Hmm. But I kind of think that it's a lot of just internalized homophobia, and it seems like the right thing to do, or I don't know. But also, I think I've read in Boy Erased, there was some information there, and then just talking about how a lot of these folks aren't truly ex-gay. Like, they've just been able to condition themselves to, like, not find other guys attractive or something. But at the end of the day, they still are gay. They're just kind of, like, trying to skirt around the problem. So it's like, mm-hmm. even the success stories aren't true successes. So it's kind of strange.
Yeah, I think for a lot of folks, the intention there is a good one of wanting to follow God's will and to, you know, be an active part of the church in a way that seems faithful. But also, I think there's a lot of fake it till you make it attitude that goes into it once you get into some of those movements. And so I think a lot of the folks who say that, you know, they are now ex-gay or anything like that, it's a bit of a desire to fit in and to be considered faithful and to, you know, just believe that, you know, God can work miracles and all these things that you've been taught all your life and desperately wanting it to go away. And so my impression is that it comes from a sincere place and is probably pretty hard in the midst of that to see how you're harming a lot of the other folks around you in your life and that are having to deal with the consequences of you saying, you know, I'm no longer gay, and everyone else can, you know, get rid of that in their life if they only believe hard enough, basically. All right, Jacob, what did you most wish your parents had understood about you when growing up?
Oh gosh, this is tough.
That's a heavy one.
That's really heavy. I think mostly in regards to my dad, I maybe wish that he understood that I wasn't as lazy as he thought I was, because everything that he wanted and expected me to do were things that I wasn't interested in. So it negated his perception and his ability to see that I was excelling in all these other things. So I wish he just would have understood that there are other ways to be a boy growing up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Rather than playing baseball for 9 years, which I did, basketball for 11 years. Like, when I quit baseball to join track, like, I'm still Jacob, you know what I mean? And that doesn't negate me from being a masculine boy of what he thought was what I was supposed to be. So I don't know. I just wish that he would have understood that there is no monolith. There's no homogenous perspective or idea of what a boy should be.
Yeah, entirely.
Yeah.
Patrick, how about you?
Yeah, this is a tough one. I think in a lot of ways growing up, I kind of had it put together. Like, I got good grades. I played sports and did well. I was in musicals and that sort of thing. And I think I gave a lot of people, my parents included, the impression that I kind of had everything put together or that I had all the answers. And I think, and, you know, under the surface, I had a lot of uncertainty, both around my sexuality, but just kind of my identity and my self-being in general. And I feel like it could have been really helpful had someone kind of, I don't know, like, gotten through to me and had talked to me on a deeper level and kind of gotten through to that side to kind of open up about some of that stuff. But it's also kind of my own fault for being so walled off and kind of private about that. But that would be the only thing that I can really think of.
Yeah, I appreciate that a lot. I think that's a perspective that I had, especially when I was in college and in the seminary, of wanting to seem very perfect so that no one would kind of look underneath the surface and mm-hmm. see all the exactly. ways that I was struggling and felt empty and was desperately confused. I think for me, it would be some kind of, you know, like, I know I did some things and hurt my folks a lot in kind of like those high school years. And I wish I could have explained to them, or they could have understood a little more of just how much a lot of those ways that I was kind of like acting out and not communicating well with them was out of that pain, out of that confusion of my own life, out of wanting to just feel normal like everyone else seemed to do around me. And to them, I know it just seemed like I would, you know, go back and forth from being like a good kid to being like this total shithead. And
so, not to interrupt here, but do you all understand, like, it was, you guys weren't intentionally being rebellious and trying to make your family feel bad?
Yeah, I definitely understand that now. And even at the time, I kind of understood. I didn't have any way to articulate it. And mm-hmm. I wish that I could have.
And I think for me, it was, I don't know, I grew up in like a small rural community. So I felt like there was a lot of pressure on me because people knew my family and my extended family in the area. So it's like, I don't know, you step out of line at all. And it seemed like it was a reflection, not just on myself, but them in general. And that was, I think, a lot of pressure and a lot of the emphasis on perfection and any sort of like deviation was not looked upon well.
Yeah, hard ditto in that one.
Yeah, that's tough. I was very rebellious as a kid. Not rebellious in a way that's like I acted out, but I just, for some reason, I knew inside, like, hey, this is who I am. If my family's parents or people at the church aren't going to accept them and myself, they're just going to have to deal with it. They're the ones who have to change or are at a loss. So I don't know. I feel like there's a kind of a juxtaposition in my experience.
Yeah, but healthy. I think that's, it's good to feel that within yourself of like knowing what is right about you and being able to stick by that even when other folks don't see it.
Absolutely.
All right, Pat, what do you think will be the best way to evangelize the LGBT community?
Yeah, this one's interesting. This one came in from Instagram, and I think it assumes that there's a lot within the LGBT community that needs to be evangelized and changed. And that idea I do want to push back against, that like there's a lot wrong with the LGBT community, that there's a lot that it needs to change to become more Christian, more Catholic. And I think that I think we don't fully understand yet the ways in which there are big parts of the queer community that are like beautiful manifestations of the Holy Spirit out in the world. And just because they may have left their parents' church a long time ago and not found a place that they feel spiritually at home doesn't mean that they, you know, need to be evangelized in this really big way. That being said, there are ways that I hope that people of faith can feel more comfortable expressing like their own beliefs, even within the queer community, so that folks who have had these spiritual longings within them and felt like they have no home within the queer community to also be spiritual, especially Christian. I hope that we can grow as a community so that it's a space that's also welcoming for Christians within the queer community in a way that has often been kind of pitted against itself. Like, you need to leave behind your Christianity in order to fully become queer. And that, I think, is a mistake and a way that, I guess if you want to describe that as evangelization, I think we just need to be more comfortable expressing those two aspects of our own lives so that other people can see it and say, oh, like they didn't have to completely
abandon
their own you know, faith in order to become queer, and they didn't have to like shit all over the queer community in order to re-understand who they are as a person of faith. Like, you don't have to just be like, oh my God, there are a bunch of like heathens in the queer community. Like, that's not at all been my experience. That's not how I perceive it. And I think that both sides can do a better job of learning from one another and seeing why it is that God's doing really cool things in both communities.
So the person who asked the question, when they said the word evangelize, do you think they're meaning to spread the word of God or just open the queer community's idea of what a faithful person is?
Yeah, I'll admit that I read that question with the the biases of someone who grew up with the word evangelize, meaning going in and changing that person, like going in and getting them to become more Christian. That's what evangelizing means in the community that I grew up in. And I'm not sure if that's where that question came from. But that's why, I think that if evangelize in that context means going in and changing the queer community, I think that's the wrong perspective. I think we need to start from trying to learn from the queer community as Catholics before we can even have that conversation.
Yeah, I think with identity politics being very rampant these days, it's very hard to be a part of both communities.
Yeah.
I feel like there's like a sort of litmus test. Like if you are a Christian and queer, you're negated from the community. And I know that's not like a hard rule, but often people do follow that line. And, coming from Seattle, you and I, a lot of coworkers were always so surprised and really just caught off guard when I told them that I was converting to Catholicism. And it just kind of put this weird assumption in their head about what my intentions were in becoming Catholic. So I think dialogue definitely needs to happen between both communities.
Yeah, I think the extent to which we can show the world what a fully affirming queer Catholic looks like, and other queer communities of Christians who are fully affirming, like what does that look like in the world, will help the rest of the world see us as fully formed, realized. It's not like we're just totally atomizing these pieces of our lives. Patrick, you got anything?
No, I tend to agree a lot. I think it's difficult because I've had both experiences. So I've had folks where I've told them that I'm a gay Catholic or a queer Catholic, and they've been really surprised, whether that's other queer folks or straight folks that I would consider allies, et cetera. And they've all been really interested in the work that we're doing. But I've also had folks on both sides that have also been critical or poked fun at what we're doing or that sort of thing. So it's definitely a weird in-between to be in. And I don't know, I waffle back and forth sometimes depending on the experience that I have with people. But I totally agree that just having some visibility and letting folks know that we exist is a big part of it.
Do y'all feel like that's like an innate part of being Catholic, kind of being an in-between?
Being an in-between?
In-between in like you're straddling, like, so there are many Catholics who follow Catholic social teachings and lean left, but also are pro-life. So there's a lot of those ambiguities, not ambiguities, but gray areas where Catholics find themselves.
Yeah, I think the refrain I often heard growing up was to be fully Catholic is to be kind of politically homeless. Often that was basically in the community I grew up in, that meant that like if only Republicans could like, maybe be a little bit nicer on immigration and not just be so vitriolic, we'd have like the perfect, political party. That's like the perspective of basically everyone that I grew up with. I think a lot of Catholics definitely do struggle with that idea of not feeling like you have a party that totally, kind of checks all your boxes and doesn't disappoint you on some level. I know I personally feel a lot more at home in the Democratic Party than I, ever did growing up or anything like that. But I there is a certain level to which, being Catholic, I think, is to be stretched and to not fully feel at home in the world. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Patrick, what Thanksgiving dish needs to be kicked out of the holiday canon of Turkey Day foods?
Oh, this is a great question.
Don't you dare say green bean casserole.
Have you been planning for this one?
So I've actually been planning a Friendsgiving. I am the cook among my friends. So I am going to be like making a full turkey, that sort of thing.
Impressive.
Yeah, thank you. I would have to kick out like the maybe this is a Midwestern dish, but like sweet potatoes with a bunch of brown sugar and cinnamon and then marshmallows on top. Like, I don't understand it as a food. I don't like it. It's like absurdly sweet. Love sweet potatoes, but the marshmallows on top are just not
okay,
my
jam. Okay,
you
won me back there at the end. I was about to cut off your mic, but if you're talking about just standard sweet potatoes, they can stay, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But this is like,
oh, thank God,
butter and brown sugar and then marshmallows. It's the marshmallows. Yeah. I don't get it. It drives me crazy.
Okay, the marshmallows have got to go. Agreed. I'm also going to kick cranberry sauce off of Thanksgiving Island.
I love
it's
cranberry sauce.
It's gone. I'm sorry. There's nothing you can do about it.
Have you ever made your own by any chance? It's so much better.
No, it's,
and it's so easy,
gross,
I promise. Okay. Okay. You get one. It's fine.
Jacob?
I don't know, man.
As
this is tough.
You like them all?
Yeah. So I'm just going to say green bean casserole with the French's onion topping is by far the best part. I'm with Pat's dad on this.
Yeah, my dad is a big fan. Usually my family will have one green bean casserole that's just for my dad that's got the little French's onion thing on top, and then that's made from a can. And then my mom will make like the homemade one
that's
for the rest
amazing.
Of the family.
So I'm going to say pumpkin pie, and I'm probably going to get a lot of slack for this.
We are going to get so much hate mail from this.
Okay. Confession time. I
however
also don't
you...
like pumpkin pie.
Yes.
Wow.
I definitely prefer pecan pie, or as I like to say, pecan pie.
Northerner.
That I love more than pumpkin pie.
All right.
Sorry, y'all.
Learning a lot about you. Jacob, who or where would you haunt if you were a ghost?
Why do I get all these questions? Who or where would you haunt if you were a ghost?
Yeah, like you can haunt a place if that's what you care most about, or if you just want to follow a person around and haunt
that's
them all their
creepy.
Life.
I'm not going to say who, because that's weird, and I'm assuming terrifying for that individual.
I mean, you could like haunt Steve Bannon.
I'd rather not deal with him in my afterlife.
Fair.
I would haunt St. James Cathedral.
Live in the sacristy?
This might fall on deaf ears. There's that 2 Chainz song where he says, "When I die, bury me inside a Gucci store." Inside St. James Cathedral.
I mean, usually bishops get buried in cathedrals, but I will put in a request for you when you die.
Archdiocese just of Seattle, just slip me in there. Don't tell anybody.
Jacob in the crypt.
So, and my reasoning
of Seattle.
With Hunthausen.
Yeah.
The reason why is because that was such a really beautiful place for me, and I would love to see it grow, and I would love to see what it looks like in the future.
Right.
So, yeah. Easy one for me.
Okay. Awesome. Patrick, do you have anything to add? Do you want to haunt anybody?
You know, what initially came to mind was like the U.S. Congress, just so I could like mess with people when they were stripping rights away from people. I could just
whisper votes into their ear.
Exactly. So I don't know. I'm like a political nerd though too, so that seems exciting to me. But that was my gut instinct, so I'm going to go with it.
Pat?
I don't know. I think I would like haunt a... puppy adoption center so I could like play with dogs all day.
I was just about to say that.
Like, can you imagine how much fun they would have with a ghost? Okay, that's what I'm gonna do when I die.
So Pat, if you were canonized as a saint, what aspect of your life would you most be embarrassed about to be made a patron saint of?
Okay, so I think this question is getting at like, if you know how patron saints are often given for a thing that they struggled with in their life. So, like, what thing about my life would I be most embarrassed to be made a patron saint of?
Putting mattresses on top of Priuses.
We need this story.
This was
that's for another time, y'all.
No. Let's get into it. This was our this was our first fight as a couple.
We would it wasn't a fight. It was me being very silent.
I mean, also yelling.
No.
I mean, there was no yelling, okay. But it was you were upset.
I don't yell, y'all. Patrick tends to over-exaggerate. I'm a very quiet person, but my facial expressions, as my first question will visit back to, I don't hide my emotions. So Yeah, take it away from there. I wasn't yelling, by the way.
I was newish to Seattle, and I had been living on an air mattress for the first couple of months, and then a family friend in the Seattle area donated a queen mattress into my life, but it was in their storage facility, so we had to go pick it up. I was driving a Prius at the time, and I asked Jacob, hey, will you come along and help me dig out this mattress from their storage container?
This was our, I think, second date.
Yeah, if you want to call that a date, it was definitely one of the very first times we were even hanging out. And so we drove over there and I convinced him, hey, I don't need to rent a truck. I'm just going to put it on top. And Jacob was really nice. And he was like, no, I'll rent a van for you. I promise, like, it'll be so much helpful. And I was like, you can totally throw a queen size mattress on top of a Prius.
I even offered to just, because we went about 20 miles south.
Right.
And an IKEA was about 5 miles away from us. And I even offered, let's just go get a mattress that's rolled up and bundled.
And I was like, nope, this was a free, nice mattress that was donated to me. I'm going to go get this one. We dug it out, got all the wrap poops off of the top of the mattress, strapped it down with some twine, and then got on the highway and started driving. And it was not staying down. And it was like flapping and really struggling. We were driving like 30 miles an hour on the highway.
I think my wrist was dislocated.
Oh, yeah. Of course, we're trying to like hold it down and oh, everything. And yeah. And at that point, you got very frustrated.
I just got very quiet.
Yeah, but it was rooted in frustration.
And there was no yelling, by the way.
No yelling. All right. We got it to the house, and then eventually, and you were living down in Tacoma at the time, so you still had to like go catch a bus.
Which was 40 miles south of where you were.
So you still had a long night ahead of you. And so, yeah, it was a very awkward second date.
After a day of working and commuting.
So I'm going to say that that's what I would be most embarrassed by if I made a canonized a saint, mattresses or moving, the patron saint
moving. There you go. Logistics.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, that's not my strong suit.
Yes. There we go.
Too funny.
But Jacob, I am curious, what would be your cause that if you were made a saint?
I don't know if that's up to me. I think so
here's the question though. You're up in heaven, and what would you be most embarrassed about if like you became the person that folks prayed to for that thing? What about your life currently? Would you be like, oh, this is embarrassing?
Is that part going into the podcast?
Sure.
I don't know. Spreadsheets in Excel?
I feel like that's a good thing. You wouldn't be embarrassed by that, would you?
Does data even matter in the future?
I thought the future was data.
Yeah, I'm sure it absolutely does. Yeah, true. I don't know. Either being meticulous about spreadsheets or talking to animals in a weird voice, which used to grind my gears when my mom would talk to my dog in a very, like, a kind of a babyish voice.
Yeah.
But I do it in a much more, like, comical, old person voice. And I know it annoys you sometimes.
No, it doesn't. Mm-hmm. That's why I do the voices.
I'll say being methodical and I just too intense with planning and spreadsheets.
Okay, I think that you would be the patron saint of smelling things.
Oh, I've heard about this.
Because listeners at home...
Did he tell you about this?
I mean, no.
He's got a fantastic sense of smell, but it's very sensitive and will go off at times that no one else in the room can smell anything, including, like, I'll be home for a little while, and he'll walk into the door from work, and the very first thing he'll say is, what's that smell?
And I'll go...
And I'll be like, hey, just me. I've been here for the past couple hours. Good to see you.
I will walk around and not sniff like a dog, but I will do my rounds around the apartment and try to figure out.
Me. He will smell me to try and figure out if that's where the smell is coming from.
And it's not like a bad thing. I very much enjoy smells. I used to be, and I will gladly admit that I used to spend over $100 on a single candle.
Yeah, that's true.
Because I enjoy the smell so much. So yeah, maybe... Yeah.
The patron saint of smells.
Of olfactory.
There you go. Great.
Well, if everyone else is, if everyone else is dishing on things that they are embarrassed about, I pick my fingers and it drives me crazy. And it's like a stress relief sort of thing. I don't know. But that would probably be it, because it would be nice to get some support in helping myself stop right now. So I'd like to provide that to other people.
Are you picking the cuticles or like, The actual fingertips.
The cuticles, yeah.
Okay.
It's like embarrassing me to...
Is that an anxiety thing?
It kind of is, but it's also just like an automatic response. I think I do it in my sleep at this point. So it's like a very hard habit to break. I broke it for about 6 weeks, I would say 3 years ago. And I was just doing fine.
Wait,
and
so how do you know that you broke?
I just started up again. Yeah.
So how do you know that you stopped it for 6 weeks if you were doing it in your sleep?
No, like you could tell. Like you can see when it happens, you know. Like
there's evidence.
Yeah, exactly. Like it gets the skin gets all beat up and I actually had nice fingers for once in my life.
All right, folks. When we die, you've got your patron saints of moving olfactory and picking your cuticles.
There we go.
All set out for everyone.
Ora pro nobis.
All right, Patrick, Pope Francis calls you up on the phone. What are you going to say?
I don't even know. Hello, Father? It sounds so weird.
It's a great start.
But I can't think of anything else.
All right, he says, I want to know about your life so that I can better understand queer Catholics. What are you going to tell him?
Oh, man, I feel like there's so much here. And I feel like he kind of gets it, too, on one hand. But I think really just sharing the story, I guess sharing my life story and the struggle, but also the fact that we're Catholics like anybody else. I think that's kind of what I would try to share as evidence. But I do feel like he gets it at the same time, like right now, that he realizes that people struggle with different things and that, you know, we're all just trying to be the best Catholics we can be. This is a good question, though. I feel like I want to think on this some more. I'd probably be in shock, honestly. Also, are we speaking Italian? Are we speaking English? Like, it better be the latter.
He speaks English,
yeah.
Yeah, it'll be heavily accented English, but it's a very affectionate one.
I was picturing like this weird moment where I had the gift of tongues and I could just speak Italian. I don't know. He doesn't even speak Italian, does he?
He does speak
South
Italian.
America.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No. He's from Argentina, but he speaks Italian fluently. I think that's one of the reasons why they chose him. Was he could quickly pick up and get the Roman Curia.
By the way, is that not a requisite? But say you are a cardinal or a bishop from the United States and you don't speak Italian, are you going to have to learn Italian?
I think you would have to learn. Yeah, technically any Catholic male can be selected as Pope. You don't even have to be a priest
or a
cardinal or anything. It can be any Catholic male. But they, I mean, pretty much it's almost only been cardinals. There's been a couple of just like other folks that have eventually been selected as Pope, including ones from other countries and stuff. But often that was back in the day of Latin. So it's a more recent thing to unofficially require Italian.
Patrick, brush up on your Italian.
Yeah, get ready. That phone call's coming.
I know. I need to practice. I'll get a script on my phone and the notes app.
All right, Jacob, this question is for you. Did you honestly think that Vine and Fig would last this long?
Oh, man, that's a tough one. Okay, that's not a tough one. But when at the inception or the kind of the conceptualization of Vine and Fig, when you brought this up to me, I was unsure of how it would pan out. Not that I wasn't excited for it, but I was unsure of how many people would actually buy into it or be open about their experiences of being queer and Catholic.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't even know when y'all started.
Our 1 year anniversary will be Christmas.
1 year,
Eve.
Yeah.
Yep.
So you know, I was there for the talks of you beginning and thinking about this
and the planning and the prepping and all that.
When you and Patrick, and then I am not surprised now that it's lasted this long. I'm just so regardless of what I thought back then, I'm just so happy that it's thriving now. In our Slack community, there's just south of 300, or maybe there's 300
now.
Yeah,
there's at least 300 that I think are considered active.
Active? So I'm just was weary of how this would pan out, but I am very happy that it's lasted this long, and I do think that it's going to keep thriving.
I know I was... I am surprised that we have this much going on within Vine and Fig. I think there was a couple of moments where I was, you know, wondering, okay, is this going to fizzle out? Is this really going to keep going? But I never imagined that less than 1 year in, we would have, you know, this really active newsletter, that we would have a Slack community that was active and vibrant, that we would have all these videos that we've produced, that we would have a podcast now, things like that. I did not realize the speed with which we would be able to, yeah, to get some of these things up and running. A lot of stuff that, you know, I know we dreamed about doing when we first were in those planning phases, but I assumed that would be several years down the road, not something that we would have up, yeah, and running this quickly. So that's pretty exciting.
And I think I had kind of something to show for all of this is the emails that we're getting in from priests that are saying, I love the work that you're doing. It's, you know, it's helping me understand what gay Catholics, what queer Catholics are concerned about. Others that are saying, you know, I was losing faith and wanting to leave the church. Thank you for this because it's bringing me back.
Yeah. Real feedback of showing just how much of an impact a community like this can have.
Yeah. And honestly, I guess go off topic, but making friends along the way, friends and family.
Yeah, absolutely. Patrick, did you think that Vine and Fig would last this long?
That's a good question. I was a little skeptical. Like, it seemed like a big undertaking and I was unsure what shape or form things would have. But I kind of echo your sentiment, Pat, where it's been really cool to see what we have going on and some of the regular content and stuff that we've been creating. And I'm getting really, really encouraged by seeing the Sunday reflections that people are writing in. I have made that part of like a Sunday ritual, or even Saturday night when I'm putting them into the website, of going through and reading the mass readings and then reading them and seeing what folks have. And I know I get a lot out of that. So that's been really cool to see. Excited to see where the community grows to as well. I can't believe it's been a year. And if we've come this far, I think we could do some really cool stuff in the next year coming up too.
Yeah, I think we have a lot of growth still ahead of us. That's really exciting.
Okay, this question is for Pat. What celebrity chef would you choose to be your personal cook if you were suddenly rich?
I need to watch more of like the Cooking Channel, the Food Network. That's the name of that channel, to get my, I feel like I'm not on top of my celebrity chefs. I was really hoping this one would go to somebody else. I put it in there. I guess as long as we are imagining a world where I'm suddenly rich, it wouldn't be too much of a stretch to imagine a world where Anthony Bourdain was still alive. And
oh, yeah,
he would easily be my a personal cook, not so much so because of the amazing food that he cooked, although he, you know, I do love French food and that's kind of his expertise, but I would just love having him in the kitchen every day. I think that'd be amazing. So Anthony Bourdain would be my personal cook.
Patrick?
I am obsessed with the Bon Appetit Test Kitchen. There is on YouTube, the magazine, everything. I've been like a print subscriber for, 4 or 5 years now. And it's been really cool to watch them get this online presence. So I would say anybody from the Bon Appetit Test Kitchen, for similar reasons, Pat, where I just want to be hanging out with them because they all seem really cool. But I have a soft spot in my heart for Claire Saffitz, who recreates all sorts of things, Skittles and like Twinkies, mm-hmm, and just all sorts of goods, but also is like a baked good expert as well. So it'd be fun to like chat with them, but also to bake with them. So that would be mine.
Did you see the Takis that she recently recreated?
I haven't watched it. It's actually on my to-do list, fantastic, for today.
Okay, awesome. The Takis one is great because I love Takis. Jacob, who would be your personal celebrity chef?
So I, too, love the Bon Appetit Test Kitchen. Claire, so it's either between Claire and Andy. If, mm-hmm, I had to say something different, I would probably say Barefoot Contessa.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
She is just a bundle of joy.
Yeah, always happy.
And she just has a gaggle of gays that come onto her show.
Yeah.
So I know she's affirming and with,
are you ready,
love,
for that much butter in your life, too?
You've been getting me to the gym, so I'm ready.
Okay, great.
Andy, for sure, though, if you want to be completely honest.
All right, Patrick, this one is kind of a continuation of the question that Jacob had. What are you most proud of at Vine and Fig?
I would say the community involvement, which I think I hinted at earlier, but I know that we have a shortcoming being founded by like two white cis gay males, and it's been cool to see a variety of different folks sharing stories. And I think it's something that I want to see us doing even more of, and just getting really dynamic stories that people are living. So I think that's what I'm most proud of, seeing that come to fruition.
I'm going to shoot this over to the other founder, the co-founder.
I think I'm most proud of the number of folks who have really stepped out of their own comfort zone just in joining the community, mm-hmm. and being able to introduce themselves and even feel comfortable just, you know, I know we every now and then we kind of joke about the lurkers in the background, but like it actually takes a decent amount of guts considering a lot of just how much kind of self-hate and internalized homophobia and everything that so many of us, you know, had within the church growing up, just to join a community and say, I want to listen to some of these folks. It takes a lot to get to that point. And I'm really proud of so many who have been willing to do so. Our community has been a place that is just incredibly positive and uplifting, and a lot of encouragement that goes on there. And I'm really excited for ways that we can try and share some of those stories, as you were mentioning, Patrick, of being able to especially get a more diverse and accurate display of what the queer Catholic community looks like, besides just, you know, the two or even three of us. But I'm incredibly proud of those who have been willing to even just share their story with a bit of a more private community like we have in the Slack room.
I agree. And when you say joking about the lurkers, we mean like we wish that there would be more activity going on. And we're not meaning to say that you shouldn't be in the backgrounds reading. If that's your comfort zone, then by all means, if that helps you kind of find your way into this community, go for it.
Yeah, 100%.
And, you know, just to echo off of the diversity of the queer community and representation of it, I totally agree. We definitely need more stories. So if you are a POC, trans, non-binary, we would love to hear your experience.
Please, please.
Even if it doesn't have to do with the Catholic faith, allowing us to showcase your experience would be an honor, and would allow others within the Catholic community to understand what it's like to be in your shoes. But what really has moved me about Vine and Fig is everyone's transparency and vulnerability into their experiences so far. There are individuals who are just very open about struggles that they've dealt with, even beyond finding their Catholic faith and intersecting with their queer identity. So yeah, it's not new. I mean, it is nuanced. So it really forces me to think beyond what I know.
All right, let's do we'll call it a lightning round version in order to try and get through some of these questions, because there's still some really good ones in there. All right, Jacob, if you were stuck seeking sanctuary in a church for years on end, would you rather become the Hunchback of Notre Dame and live in the bell tower, or would you become the old lady who lives in the sacristy and sets everything out for Father before Mass?
I would probably be the old lady setting up the sacristy for the Father before Mass. I feel like it would just be lonely being up in the bell tower.
Yeah.
And usually the old women who do set up the sacristy are fabulous. Andrea, who was in my RCIA group.
Yeah.
Whoa. The most stylish Catholic woman I've ever met in my life. She is a New Yorker turned Seattleite Northwesterner, but she still holds strongly onto that New Yorker appeal of fashion. And I think that would be me.
Okay.
Hopefully.
Awesome.
Okay, Pat, what makes you most angry about Catholic Twitter? All right, and keep this short.
I don't know. I suppose Catholic Twitter doesn't seem very novel to me, because it's exactly what Facebook was like for me growing up, because those same Catholics were on there and they were commenting on anything and everything and posting things that made me angry just when I was in high school and in my 20s. And so I feel like that same instinct to debate and comment and shut down any kind of thought that contradicts the way they view the world. Like those same folks are still online and they're still behaving the same way, even though Catholic Twitter, I think, gets a lot more publicity and gets talked about a lot more nowadays. Honestly, the biggest thing for me, though, is the folks who have an anonymous account, and usually it's like some kind of Latin name and a photo of
a monstrance.
Yeah, of a monstrance or just like a church or something. And then they like are challenging folks who are like journalists with tens of thousands of followers to like debate them and try and shut them down. It's like you can't even show your face on Twitter and you expect an answer and are being a dick about it too. So,
and I will say they're usually converts.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. I think converts get a bad rap. I don't think they're quite as bad as like it's always that, but I think there's a lot of convert zeal that does go on there. Oh, all right. Generic question, Patrick. What are you most afraid of?
Snakes, by far. Growing up, we had a snake that got into our house and it was under our fridge because it was warm in the condenser area. And I have always hated snakes and it was a traumatizing experience. And I kid you not, I shivered just thinking of that like hour where we were trying to get the snake out from under the fridge. Can't stand them.
Yeah, I hate snakes.
I'm a snake.
Water snakes? Like, what is that? Jacob,
this one came... Oh, water snakes are bad.
So I'm just going to jump in real quick. When we drove down to Texas, the only thing I could think about was snakes. And I kept asking Patrick or Pat, are there snakes in those bushes? Do rattlesnakes or moccasin snakes live in that area?
Every time we go on a hike or anything, it's, so are there going to be snakes in this area? Are there going to be snakes in this lake that we're going to?
Water moccasins are the most terrifying things in this world.
Yeah. All right. This question was sent in by a Instagram follower. Is the Pope gay or nah?
And I have to answer this. So yeah. This is my question.
Yeah.
Gay as in happy? Yes. He's very cheerful. His like faces are very emotive and I love them. And he just has a very endearing, welcoming demeanor. Gay, that's not my thing to comment on or, yeah.
I will say, I think when he was first elected, there were some interviews that came out from his past talking about, like, past girlfriends and stuff like mm-hmm. that. Like, I think there's reason to think that, yes, it's his own business, but also he's been open about past girlfriends.
Okay, Pat, who was your first queer friend?
That's interesting. I did not have any queer friends or anybody that I knew that was queer growing up, like even in high school. I didn't know anybody. And so I think that's one reason why my own coming out to my parents and everything was a very complicated thing for me because I didn't have anybody that I could ask or talk to about it.
Was it me?
It was not you. You came a little bit later. There were some coworkers that came later. That were, I definitely considered friends that kind of helped me see like, oh, okay, this is what a fully fleshed out, just very normal gay, lesbian, whatever person looked like. And I can't think of anybody off the top of my head that like, oh, this person was the very first one. But it I know it was a coworker that I would have considered my very first queer friend. Mm-hmm. All right, Patrick, how can we live out the apparent conflict between being humble and being proud of who we are?
Oh, that's a good question.
You can't see it, but Jacob's making a face like, what the fuck?
I feel like this is coming from like a definition of pride in relation to pride parades where, you know, pride is considered mm-hmm. this like yeah, sinful exactly. thing. But I think that the definition of pride when it comes to a pride parade is one more about kind of like self-respect, but also like, I don't even know, like this group showing some confidence and like ownership of their own identity. And so I think, I don't know, there's nothing that's not being humble about just loving and being yourself. So I feel like that's maybe the reading or interpretations of the word pride, but that's the first thing I thought of.
Yeah, agreed. I think we can be prideful of the things that God is doing in your life, and that includes like the way he made you. So
yeah, and pride praise, I think it's an affirmation for others who may not be at that step yet. So yeah.
Jacob, what advice would you give to gay Catholics discerning the morality of their own same-sex relationships?
Oh, man.
You asked for tougher questions. We gave you like questions about ducks and stuff, and you didn't like that. So here's a tough one.
So what advice would I give gay Catholics discerning the morality? Okay, I don't like going into very deep theological debates, but for me, I think just being comfortable with being in a same-sex relationship, you're not broken. You're not intrinsically, why am I blanking?
Disordered,
yeah. That's garbage and very harmful. I think you should just, and it's tough to say this because I come from a very different background, but acknowledge that you're not broken and that you are worthy of love.
I think that's a great place to start.
All right, Patrick, your favorite time of the year in the liturgical calendar. Advent starts in another week. What is your favorite part about Advent?
I love the music in Advent. It becomes a lot quieter and there's like, it's a very distinctive emotion, one of like longing and almost a little bit sad to Advent music. O Come, O Come, Emmanuel is my jam. I just love it so much. So yeah, the music is a very, very important part of that season for me.
No organs.
December 1st. Come on. All right, Patrick Weston, would you rather get the Sacred Heart of Jesus or Immaculate Heart of Mary tattooed on your neck?
On your neck?
On my neck? I have no tattoos, so this would be a wild departure. Wait, what if I said both? One on, kind of like one on each side.
Oh, damn. You're going to go one on each side.
Just go hardcore.
Number one pious boy right here. Yeah.
I think I'm going to say both and break the question.
Full color or black and white?
Let's go full color. Why not? Live it up.
All right. Jacob, how do you work through internalized homophobia?
Oh my gosh. Sorry, Jacob.
I don't want to say that I don't have internalized homophobia. But I, being a convert to Catholicism and fully being comfortable with my queer self before I converted to Catholicism, I think is, again, I've said it before, it's made it easier. How do I work through it? It would be hard to know if I was doing something that was homophobic and internal unless someone called me out on it. I don't know if I'm making any sense.
Do you ever feel like you are... you pick up on other people's cues of homophobia of, and start to feel kind of like ashamed or self-conscious about it? Or when it happens, it's just like, fuck them.
It's mostly fuck them.
Yeah.
Screw you guys. But okay. So I guess that kind of brings up, you know, now that we've moved to Texas, very big on football down here.
Yeah.
And so whenever I do go in the office and football talk does come up and someone is like, oh, so are you going to watch the game this weekend? I do get a little weary and nervous about answering that question. But I used to. Now it's just like, I'm not into football.
Yeah.
But the reaction that I get usually is like, oh, that's weird. I think is a little nerve-wracking at times. But it's a fleeting moment for me. So I don't know. This is a bad question for me.
That's all right. The desire to fit in is real, though.
So, Pat, how can someone outside of the LGBTQ community help?
I think the biggest thing that a non-queer person can do to help is to be active in your own circles of your own affirmations of queer people. I think you don't realize just how much, A, there are other closeted people probably in your life that need to hear it, but B, how much, especially like in Catholic circles and everything, there is a presumption of basic homophobic attitudes out there in the world. And the more that you can push against it, whether it's, you know, it's talking about a queer couple in your life that you are really proud or grateful for, or talking about, you know, some crazy laws that are being discussed or whatever, like the more that you can bring that up and show where you're at, it'll help other folks along. And I think, especially within the church, a lot of issues around the LGBTQ community just don't get discussed if you're not within that community. And I think the more that other folks can bring them up, it'll really help. All right, Patrick, do you think gay sex outside of marriage can be holy?
Oh, no. Why did I get this question? let's see here. I kind of feel like anything has the potential to be holy. If I don't know, honestly, I don't have a good answer for this. I don't know. I'm just going to pass.
you saw Boy Erased, right?
I did. And I read the book.
So
too.
Do you remember that scene when the main character walks over to the artist's place and they're in the bedroom and they just lay there together? I found that to be very holy.
Yeah.
Outside of it, I think it's alluding to that it was a sexual moment, or that wasn't, maybe there was a sexual moment. I'm assuming there was a sexual moment after that. But I feel like just that moment of them being there, vulnerable and open to each other, was very holy.
And I think that is the type of experience that can help a lot of folks who are nervous or wary of any kind of same-sex sexual interactions to just feel the holiness and the beauty of being held and comforted by someone that you are actually attracted to. And to just be able to experience that level, I think can open you up so that you're not hearing those voices in the back of your head of like, this is evil, this is evil. If you were to experience anything else, I'd also like to just throw out there that, like, just talking about sex outside of marriage itself, like there's nothing in the Bible about that. And like, that's something that was added much, much later. So like, I don't think there's anything specifically about gay sex that would make that any worse.
Part of my, I don't know, hesitation to this question is it felt like a gotcha question, if that makes sense. Somebody trying to like, I don't know, put you on the record. There. Not me in particular, but like Vine and Fig for some reason.
All right, Jacob, what advice would you have for a queer woman who wants to work for the church?
This is a tough question because I'm from a cis gay man to give advice for a woman. I don't feel like it's my part, but I feel like it's my part to listen to what women, queer women, want and seek to have participation in the church. I say keep speaking out, find those within the church that are willing to listen and, you know, fight for your needs and wants.
Yeah, I think for anybody that is willing to deal with either, you know, going through the process of finding an affirming parish that would be willing to take you as you are, or just dealing with the day-to-day of working in a parish that isn't affirming and everything that goes with that, I sure hope that we get more queer women working in and for the church because we need it.
Yeah.
Like, we need those voices and we need those perspectives. And there's so much that the church will be enriched by those perspectives and voices. So it's an enormous ask. I would never say like you should do it, but I sure hope that more will.
Yeah. And I hope that if you are comfortable in continuing in your work within the church and being outspoken about it, or not necessarily outspoken, but being open about being a queer woman, female within the church, I think staying there and showing what gifts you have definitely would speak volumes. Okay, Pat, how did you come out to yourself before coming out to anyone else?
Yeah, I knew back in middle school, and by the time I was in high school, it was very well affirmed to me by, you know, dating girls in high school that, like, there's nothing about this that I'm enjoying in a way that is more than just, you know, friendship. Like, it was actually very painful that I couldn't express the emotions and the affections that I had for other guys, and instead had to kind of like fake my way through a relationship with a girl. And so that was when I came out to myself of I'm gay, and I, you know, it is going to be who I am for the rest of my life. And I think it was through trying to convince the rest of the world that I wasn't by dating girls that it really kind of became a reality, kind of deep down within my sense of self, of this is who I am. All right, Patrick, what are your thoughts? Oh, God, why are you getting all the hard ones?
Whoa.
All right, Patrick, what are your thoughts on pornography? Is it inherently sinful, or can it be used healthily?
Ooh, good question. oh, man, there's a lot to unpack here. I'm going to say that I feel like I'm going to let folks kind of make a judgment decision for themselves here, but I don't know, talk about my experience a little bit. And I realize that we're lightning rounding, so I'm going to try to keep it short. But I found that in my life, it's not something that is like positive for me on kind of for a variety of reasons. But I feel like I have a weird perspective here too, because I've recently started like looking at the asexuality spectrum and kind of identifying, I don't know, for myself there. So I feel like there's like weird layers to this question for me. But I'm just going to say that I'll let people decide on their own. But for me, it's not something that is particularly great for my mental health.
Awesome. Well done. All right. Here's a question that came in via Instagram. Jacob, who da baby?
If it's in regards to Vine and Fig, I would say I am. Even though I'm probably the oldest one here.
I think you're technically the oldest.
Yeah. But Pat and Pat, you're all like, dads.
Oh no.
I guess I'm the baby. I'm the Catholic baby. There you go.
You're the Catholic baby. That's very true. Yeah.
All right, Pat. So do others perceive you differently than you are?
I think when it comes to folks who are interacting with me kind of for the first time in person, I hope I come across as nice, but I'm very congenial. I'm often very go with the flow. I don't really put my opinions out there, and I am much more opinionated than a lot of folks realize. Folks will say some outrageous things to me, and I'll just kind of like go along, and I won't want to cause any kind of disruption to the relationship or anything like that. But like inside, I've got like a million arguments going on, and I'm often very frustrated. And so like, that's one area that I think folks kind of misunderstand me. I'm better about putting my opinions out there, like in my writing and on the podcast and things like that. But in person, one-on-one, I feel like I come across as a kind of a opinionless, very get along type person. Mm-hmm. And like, I guess I do get along, but I have opinions. All right, Patrick, what Catholic tradition do you dislike, but have no good reason for disliking?
What do I dislike? But I don't have a good reason for it. That also makes it hard.
Right. Like, so it's not something that you can be like, I dislike it because it's very sexist. Like, it has to be a Catholic tradition that you really don't have any reason for disliking.
Yeah, the first thing that came to my mind good was reason. Like, let's get some women priests up in there. But
no, you have good reason for disliking that.
Let's see here. I guess I'm going to say incense. I don't know. The smell just bothers me. It makes me sneeze. I don't really have a great reason. I don't know. I kind of waffle though, because I do like it at some points in time. But there have been a couple churches that I've gone to that have gone really hard in the paint with it, and I don't get it.
I think you've got a kindred spirit in Jacob.
No, I love incense.
But doesn't it overwhelm you sometimes?
No, not at all.
Just kidding. Just kidding. Just kidding.
You can put as much incense out there that I can't see the altar, and I am all for it.
I also
like I it. Was at a church that was like that. It was visibly foggy in the church. I'm not kidding.
I will say as a former altar server, doing the incense is like the best job when you're altar serving. It's great. It's really fun to
swing that thing.
It's really fun. All right, Jacob, if Vine and Fig were to have a happy hour in-person meetup, what would be our community drink?
Hey, so there's like one drink that's being served?
Yeah, like the special drink that like you're going to go to the bar and order the Vine and Fig. What would it be?
Man, that's a tough one. Definitely a non-alcoholic option for those who don't drink.
I like it.
But if it were my choice, mm-hmm. it would... Can I pick two?
Sure.
Okay, two. One would be a Campari soda, and then the other would probably be a Negroni.
A Negroni, yeah. Wow. Okay. All right, there we go. That's what we're doing at the next Vine and Fig in-person meetup, which we've never had.
All right, Pat, how have you grown in your faith in the past year?
Okay, I think this is the first year that I have been helping other folks grow in their faith, or at least to be more comfortable with their own faith, while also not having it be that like super evangelistic style that we were talking about before. Like when I was a seminarian and in those years of my life, being a person of faith meant going and trying to convince other people to become Catholic. And I appreciate and I feel a lot more comfortable now that it just means like for anybody who wants to feel more comfortable about being Catholic or wants to learn more about being Catholic, like I'm happy to talk to you. And if you're not, that's great too. Like I don't feel any need to try and convince you. And that feels to me like a bit of a more mature version of faith. And I feel like I'm really grateful for, you know, whatever grace has gotten me to that point. Because when I look back at the way I used to be a person of faith, like I cringe a little bit. And I'm grateful for that extent to which I've grown. Patrick, what saint are you most connected to and why?
Oh, this is a good one. And I feel like I'm giving the cliche answer of Saint Patrick, but I have a small story to go with it. Back when we were trying to choose saints in the confirmation process, he kept sticking back in my head. I'm Irish Catholic on in roots on both sides of the family. And my one grandma in particular, who was the matriarch of the one side, would always, get me St. Patrick's Day cards and rosaries with Celtic crosses and that sort of thing. So it's always been kind of in the back of my head, but we're trying to pick saints for confirmation. And our teacher, or I can't remember who was leading it, but was passing around this bucket full of saint cards. Like, I don't even know, 400 saint cards. I've put my hand down in, fish around and grab out St. Patrick. And it just felt like this, I call them like God does exist moments, like these moments in my life where I like very clearly feel God's presence. And that was one of them. And so he's always just held a special place in my heart. I feel like it's very cliche, but also feel like I was, that there was some sort of like divine intervention there.
Did you feel like in that moment you had been chosen?
Yeah. I actually do. Like, it felt like there was this connection between him and I, and it's really cool.
That is one part about the Catholic faith that I mean, beyond just saints in general and the idea of the communion of saints, the whole process of like choosing a confirmation saint and the spirituality that goes behind it of thinking of them actually interacting and wanting to be like your patron saint is kind of neat. It's a bit mystical, but I do like that side of our church.
I totally agree.
Okay, Jacob, speaking of talking to animals, what animal would be the most terrifying if it could speak?
So going back to Black Phillip, I think goats, if they were able to speak, it would be terrifying.
Yeah.
Just that annoying yelping noise that they make, the screaming noise.
Would baby goats be terrifying? Because baby goats are incredibly cute.
They're cute, but they still make really annoying noises.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say goats. Yeah, goats or snakes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Pat, when asked how you can still be Catholic and in a queer relationship, what's your answer?
I think it is a matter of hoping in a church that can get better. And we've seen that the church can get better on a lot of other areas. It's like, how could you be a slave and Catholic? Like there were Catholic slaves and the church at the time like owned slaves. And yet it's a matter of expecting and hoping that the church can improve and learn and become converted, actually, like to learn to see the people that it calls its own children as fully formed human beings, just like the rest of its members, and not in any way, kind of like half children or half a full member of the church. And that's what I expect of the Catholic Church. And I'm willing to hold out and to help it to get to that place, because I know that it can improve. And I want to make clear that by comparing being, you know, queer to folks who were Catholic and slaves as well, I want to, like, the comparison isn't even remotely close to the way they were treated both by the church and by the rest of society. But just to say that there were areas that the church has treated its own members as less than and has learned to now see them as much more than that. And I think that the church can do that with queer people as well, even if it's not on the same level. Okay, Patrick, what daily or weekly spiritual practices do you have?
Oh, yeah, good question. Let's see. I, for the most part, go to Mass every week. I try to, but I'm not great with doing... It's kind of an examine, but also, I don't know, kind of my own thing where I just try to think of things that I'm grateful for that have happened throughout the day. But I also do kind of follow the process of thinking of areas where I was led closer or further away from God. I don't know. And then just in like a day-to-day interaction, I try to see God in small ways, whether it's like something nice a coworker says or I don't know, just unexpected small moments. But otherwise, it's kind of ad hoc. I just read things as I kind of go about my week.
Jacob, what are ways that non-Catholics can support their partners, especially those with non-affirming families?
So I think that if the partner who is non-Catholic is fully comfortable in their queer self, I think they can lean on that and make aware to their partner that they are perfect the way they are and that their relationship is perfect and that the Catholic Church shouldn't detract away from that. And also that they can have both. There's an intersection between their Catholic faith and their queer life, which is it's a tough question, I feel like, because that tends to, those two things tend to not be prevalent, I guess.
And it also really depends on the family and what that relationship is like.
I think just being a person, a partner to lean on and to listen and to affirm their queer identity and their Catholic identity is a good way to start. It's a tough question, but I think just being there for support. Okay, Pat, how are you different from the other how are you different from the other two on this podcast right now?
I feel, Pat, I'm answering this question for you.
Okay,
but,
go ahead.
No, I just feel like you have a more, and Jacob, sorry that I'm just also like assuming your experience here. I feel like you have more of a Catholic education when it comes to the nuts and bolts of Catholicism, but also kind of the theological side. You've kind of been there and have walked that walk in a lot of ways that I haven't. And I feel like I am, I don't want to say jealous is the right word, but I aspire to get to a little bit more of that level from the kind of academic side.
Yeah, I think the Catholic school teacher side of me comes out kind of instinctively still to this day of when there are questions or issues or anything like that, I jump into explainer mode pretty quick. And that's, you know, helpful and at times, and it can also be a pain in the butt when everyone's like, nope, you don't need to explain that right now. That's okay.
I will say, I feel like I always learn something from you. Like, I've learned a lot on this podcast from little things that you've chimed in about, like, oh no, the church actually doesn't have anything, or like, there's nothing in the Bible about that, or like, I don't know, things like that. It's very helpful.
Well, that's nice. I appreciate that.
All right, everybody. So for our toast this week, we are going to toast what we're most thankful for over the past year. So Patrick, what are you most thankful for?
Yeah, so I was thinking about this a little bit because I've been listening to the podcast. I know you all do the segment. And I also know that I have one shot here. So I'm kind of doing a little bit of a blanket statement to try to cover some bases. But I have a lot to be personally thankful for. I feel like I've had my most healthy year in a variety of ways, not just like physical health. But really, when I sat down and thought about the year, I think I'm most thankful for all of the folks who are standing up to different systems of inequality or differences in power. So I was thinking of people like Greta Thunberg around climate change, or like Jewish protesters on the southern border that are blocking access to ICE officials. Even here in Columbus, we had a little protest or march, I think it was last week, maybe 2 weeks ago, in front of Stonewall Columbus. So our kind of LGBT outreach organization around trying to get them to do more for trans folks. Definitely not limited to that list, but the people that are not afraid to share their stories and are not afraid to continuing to fight for what is right, no matter what. And it's been really inspiring for me to continue the fight, and it's given me kind of hope and resolve. And I'll also say the Vine and Fit community, and both you, Pat and Jacob, are in that group too. You know, like, doing the work here definitely counts as well. So I am toasting all sorts of people that are doing good in the world and trying to make it a better place.
A very inclusive toast.
That was awesome. I like that.
Yeah, me too.
I had one shot, man. Like, I had to go for it.
I mean, we're going to have you on again. Yeah, this wasn't your only time, I promise. It was your first time, not your only time.
This is my interview. Like, we'll see how it goes. Listener rate drops dramatically. Like, oh, we can't.
Trust me, my first couple podcasts were bad.
It's all right. We've gotten better.
We've grown, yeah.
All right, Jacob, what are you toasting this week? What are you most thankful for?
To kind of piggyback off of Patrick's toast, the Vine and Fit community, again, and the question that I had earlier was, you know, did I think that Vine and Fig would come this far?
Right.
But the community members, I'm toasting to y'all. Your stories, your vulnerability, your ability to open up and tell your experience of your queer lives and your faithful lives of being Catholic are more than moving for me. It's grounded me in my faith. It's weeks that I've felt desolate from God. Reading the stories have brought me back. And just knowing that this community is doing something for somebody is enough for me to toast to you all. So thank you all.
And I am most thankful for a bit of an abstract thought, which is my family and my queer identity becoming closer and kind of more unified. And I think a lot of that was brought about by you and I, Jacob, moving to Austin and just having them closer.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like we've been able to be there with my family and for my family more as a couple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not just me flying home from Seattle and visiting them, or them coming up and visiting me up in Seattle, where I kind of became more of a queer person on my own and they got to see that side of it. But I was able to bring my whole self to my family in this past year in a way that I don't feel like I've been able to do before, felt comfortable doing before. And looking back over the past year, I'm really grateful for the way that my family has embraced and been so welcoming of us as a couple and my own queerness. And I'm grateful for just the grace that has given me kind of the courage to step out and be more open and vulnerable with them on that side of me. All right, y'all, that is it for us on this special Thanksgiving Day Queer Family Dinner edition of Tabard Inn. You can support the podcast by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, and you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/vineandfigco. Happy Thanksgiving, and thanks for listening, y'all.
Bye, y'all. Love you.
See ya.